This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The Islamic State militant behind the 2021 deadly bombing of the Kabul airport has been killed by the Taliban. AP correspondent Norman Hall tells us more.
U.S. officials say a ground assault by the Taliban killed the Islamic State militant who spearheaded the August 2021 suicide bombing at the Kabul airport that left 13 U.S. troops and about 170 Afghans dead during the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Initially, neither the U.S. nor apparently the Taliban were aware that the mastermind, who was not identified, was dead. He was killed during a series of battles early this month in southern Afghanistan between the Taliban and the Islamic State group's affiliate. Islamic State Khorasan is the Taliban's most bitter enemy and top military threat. I'm Norman Hall.
Singapore has executed a man accused of coordinating a cannabis delivery. And despite pleas for clemency and protests that he was convicted on weak evidence, Tangguru Supia was sentenced for abetting the trafficking of 2.2 pounds of cannabis, even though he was not caught with the drugs. Prosecutors said that though he was not caught, that the trace phone number showed he coordinated the delivery of the drugs. He maintained he was not the person who communicated with others connected to the case. Relatives and activists sent letters to Singapore's president to plead for clemency, and his niece and nephew made a video appealing for the concerns. Critics say Singapore's death penalty has mostly snared low-level mules and done little to stop drug trafficking. There is more at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden is banking on 2 years in the White House and 50 years of Washington experience, landing him another 4 years in office, but another number is raising questions. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Is already the oldest president. The University of Chicago's William Howell and Barbara Perry at the University of Virginia do the math of another Biden bid.
Running at the age of 82.
Soon to be 83, should he be reelected.
Is going to raise issues.
We know from the polls that it is an issue for some people across this political spectrum.
At the White House.
It's the same thing that we heard in 2020.
Spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre says the president's made it a non-issue.
He's been able to deliver and get things done.
And says he would serve all 4 years of a second term if elected. He would be 86 at that point. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Sudanese and foreigners are streaming out of the capital, Khartoum, and other battle zones as fighting shakes a new three-day truce brokered by the United States and Saudi Arabia. Aid agencies raise increasing alarm Tuesday over the crumbling humanitarian situation and a country relying on outside help. So far, a series of short ceasefires the past week have either failed outright or brought only intermittent lulls in the fighting. UN officials say one side in the Sudan conflict has seized control of a national health lab in the capital that holds biological material, calling it an extremely dangerous development. The announcement came as officials warned that more refugees could flee Sudan despite the ceasefire between rival forces. The fighting has plunged Sudan into chaos, pushing the already heavily aid-dependent African nation to the brink of collapse. Prosecutors say Donald Trump might use trial documents to scorch witnesses. AP's Lisa Dwyer tells us more.
New York prosecutors are seeking to bar Donald Trump from using evidence from his criminal case to attack witnesses, citing what they say is the former president's history of making harassing, embarrassing, and threatening statements about people he's tangled with in legal disputes. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office filed court papers Monday asking for a protective order that would put strict guardrails around Trump's access to and use of evidence turned over by prosecutors during the pretrial discovery process. Trump was arraigned in April on charges that he falsified records at his company as part of a broader 2016 scheme to make secret hush money payments to bury allegations of extramarital sexual encounters. Trump has denied wrongdoing. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back. President Biden makes his re-election campaign official.
We're not making this stuff up. This is real. It's time to finish the job.
Plus, Sudan plunges further into chaos that threatens to push the aid-dependent African nation to the brink of collapse.
All UNHCR operations in Sudan's neighboring countries impacted by this new emergency already have existing large refugee and IDP populations and are also severely underfunded.
And reaction pouring in from civil rights leaders and the entertainment world following the death of singer and activist Harry Belafonte, who died Tuesday at the age of 96. Today is Wednesday, April 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London in Washington. Well, after weeks of hinting that he would run for re-election, U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday formally announced his candidacy for 2024 in a three-minute video that drew a stark picture of what he believes is at stake, the very soul of America. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington on the prospect of another election battle between Biden and his likely challenger, former President Donald Trump.
When I ran for president 4 years ago, I said we're in a battle for the soul of America, and we still are. The question we're facing is whether in the years ahead we have more freedom or less freedom, more rights or fewer. I know what I want the answer to be, and I think you do too. This is not a time to be complacent. That's why I'm running for re-election.
And with that, the 2024 presidential campaign has begun, with President Joe Biden releasing this announcement early Tuesday. He faces a likely rematch with former President Donald Trump, who announced his candidacy last year and continues to claim that he, not Biden, won the 2020 election.
We will make America glorious again.
Trump, who polls indicate is the most popular Republican candidate, faces legal peril after being indicted in New York over hush money payments made to an adult film star. Prosecutors in Georgia are also considering charging him over his actions in the state's 2020 vote count. He has made his legal woes part of his campaign.
These numbers are one of the main reasons the Marxist left is coming after us, and they're using the criminal justice system for massive election interference. That's what they're doing.
With more than 18 months until Election Day, more than a third of Americans report they already feel exhaustion over the idea of another Biden and Trump contest. Another 29% said the idea of a rematch provoked feelings of fear. Biden opened his re-election announcement with images of a violent mob thronging the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Biden shows three elected representatives he has described as MAGA extremists, a reference to Trump's slogan, Make America Great Again. Polls indicate a clear majority of Americans oppose the Capitol riot, but Biden still faces an uphill political battle, analysts say. Thomas Schwartz is a professor of history and political science at Vanderbilt University.
And he remains a divisive figure. His popularity has been under 50% since the Afghanistan withdrawal, and he has not been a particularly popular president in sort of the more general terms of we are in partisan times. And so
the ad also mentions the debate over abortion access in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision last year to throw the decision over abortion access to the states. Biden's running mate, Vice President Kamala Harris, is used to illustrate the administration's support for abortion access. The ad doesn't reference Biden's age, but he faces criticism that at 80, he is too old to hold what many see as the world's most stressful job. American voters will ultimately decide at the polls in November of 2024. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Sudanese and foreigners streamed out of the capital of Khartoum and other battle zones as fighting Tuesday shook a new three-day truce brokered by the United States and Saudi Arabia. Aid agencies are raising increased alarm over the crumbling humanitarian situation in a country reliant on outside help. There are fears of more displacement as the UN warns of a growing Sudanese refugee crisis. At a UN briefing in Geneva on the situation, spokeswoman Olga Serrato called for nations to help fund an increase in aid for the Sudan region, noting the crisis will be far-reaching.
The humanitarian impact of this crisis will be harsh. Before this crisis, Sudan hosted more than 1 million refugees and 3.7 million were internally displaced. Assistance programs that were already overstretched are now severely hampered.
A series of short ceasefires have been enough for dramatic evacuations, but have brought no relief to millions of Sudanese caught in the crossfire, struggling to find food, shelter, and medical care as explosions, gunfire, and looters wreck their neighborhoods. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that the conflict could detonate across borders and cause immense suffering for years. I spoke with Jamil Jaffer, founder and executive director of the National Security Institute, about the broader implications of this conflict.
Well, Lori, obviously the implications of what happens in Sudan are potentially very problematic for the countries that surround it, because we're already seeing significant refugee outflows from Sudan, both Sudanese who are trying to escape the fighting, but also Westerners, some of whom's countries have not been able to effectively get them out. And so we're seeing significant refugee flows. And as we know from prior experience in cases like Syria and other international crises, Yemen, these refugee flows can be very destabilizing both economically and politically for the bordering nations around the periphery of the country in crisis.
I know there's been a lot of influence, though, also, and concern about that influence. What role has that played or not played in this situation escalating?
No doubt that the role of Wagner Group, a Russian paramilitary organization, has played to his relative success relative to the national army controlled by General Burhan. And so we know that foreign nation states, some of the Arab states, as well as China, but predominantly Russia and the Wagner Group, have played a significant role in the recent fighting. And so that is causing instability, both in Sudan, but also in the neighboring countries. And that's why it's particularly problematic.
What about U.S. national security and the role that the U.S. has played in trying to help Sudan secure this very fragile peace agreement?
You know, Lori, obviously Sudan has played a role in American national security going back historically to when President Bashir was in office and gave a refuge to Osama bin Laden prior to his move to Afghanistan. So obviously it's been an important and a place that we needed to have some role in. But of course, what's happened more recently is an effort by the U.S., particularly by U.S. celebrities and the governments to help with the situation in Darfur, the atrocious genocide that took place there, you know, coordinated in part by the Janjaweed forces that General Hamati today. It's also worth noting General Burhan and his forces were involved in the Darfur crisis as well. All that being said, Lori, one of the biggest challenges we face is that the United States has essentially left Sudan. We've taken our 100 diplomats at the embassy, we've evacuated them, and we've shut down the embassy. That being said, there are still 16,000 Americans in Sudan today that have essentially been abandoned. And so from a U.S. national security perspective, our biggest concern is and should be 16,000 Americans who are left without options, potentially running out of food and water. And Secretary Blinken has made it clear that they are defend for themselves. And so a lot of these Americans are now looking to private security groups to help them escape the country. And, you know, this is all happening while you see other nations coordinating with General Burhan and his forces to evacuate their nationals, the U.N. getting its people out, the U.K. now mounting a significant civilian rescue operation. And the White House needs to take a close look at this and do something more effective for our citizens sitting on the ground there in Sudan.
And does the U.S. have any role in quelling this?
Well, you know, the United States has tried to play a role in mediating the conflict. Secretary Blinken at times has sought to have our ambassador to the area and to the African Union play a productive role. The problem, of course, as we just discussed, you know, is that the U.S. embassy there that was coordinating those efforts is now shuttered.
Jamil Jaffer, founder and executive director of the National Security Institute. April 26th marks the anniversary of the 1986 Chernobyl nuclear catastrophe in Ukraine, the biggest disaster at a nuclear power plant in history. Experts say four nuclear power plants currently operating in Ukraine are at risk due to the war. And the one under the biggest threat is the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power station, which has been occupied by Russian troops for more than a year. For VOA, Lizia Bakalets reports from Warsaw, Poland.
Last March, Russians captured the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine. Since then, experts say the station has been operating in violation of safety standards.
Due to Russian occupation, it is impossible to adhere to all the safety standards that are normally required for a nuclear power plant.
Ukraine state regulator for nuclear power plants, Energoatom, says Russian shells damaged the station's infrastructure.
Systems degrade, security degrades, and maintenance is not done on time. The equipment might fail at any moment.
Eyewitnesses say there is Russian military equipment on the station's grounds.
We saw how Russians imposed a dictatorship over the station with weapons. They captured the facilities, the perimeter, and deployed their military equipment and weapons on the station's grounds. Tanks, armored personnel carriers.
Oleg Dudar is the former head of the plant's operations division. He worked under the occupation for 6 months until he decided to run away.
No one who is not there now can imagine even how bad it is. Even I, who was there, who saw it.
Since September, all 6 reactors at the nuclear plant have been shut down. This means that the scale of the potential disaster has decreased, says Mark Zhelezniak, a professor at Fukushima University's Institute of Environmental Radioactivity.
It cannot be a big explosion because the reactors are not working. The biggest risk is for 2 cities close to the Zaporizhzhia station. First, it is the city of Enerodar, where people who work at the station live, mainly. And also, there is the city of Nikopol. It is about 10 to 15 kilometers from the nuclear station.
Poland's National Atomic Energy Agency says while the scale of the threat has decreased, electricity is needed to cool down the reactors. But the nuclear plant already had 6 blackouts, the last one in March. It happened due to shelling by Russian troops, as Energoatom said.
Electricity is needed because you have to use the pumps to cool it, to move water inside the core and remove it from the core. Without the water that is cooling right now, the temperature can increase and till moment when it will be melted. When it will be melted fuel, there will be release of the radioisotopes that's inside of the fuel.
The International Atomic Energy Agency mission has been at the plant since September and reported in April that shelling and detonations could be heard near the plant. The International Atomic Energy Agency Director General called the situation on the ground perilous and vowed to continue pressing for protection of the plant. Lesia Bakalets for VOA News.
Here are some of the other stories we are following from around the world. U.S. officials are confirming that the Taliban have killed the Islamic State group militant who spearheaded the suicide bombing at the Kabul airport that left 13 U.S. service members and about 170 Afghans dead during the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan in August of 2021. At least 90 bodies have been found at the ranch of a minister in Kenya who's accused of telling his followers to starve themselves to death to meet Jesus. The Kenya Red Cross Society says the death toll could rise as 213 people are still missing. And South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol opened his state visit to Washington on Tuesday by touring a NASA facility with Vice President Kamala Harris as the Biden administration looks to deepen ties with a close ally it sees as only growing in importance in an increasingly complicated Indo-Pacific. This is VOA News.
Israel is racked with internal divisions and mass protests over the judicial overhaul that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government wants. Analysts say that Iran and its regional proxy forces view Israel's domestic turmoil as a sign of weakness.
The protestos and more than the demonstrations, it is the threat of some reserve officers and pilots in Israel not to come if they will be called, gave the other side the...
And we have some technical difficulties. We will be back in just a few. Stay with us.
Israel is racked with internal divisions and mass protests over the judicial overhaul that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government wants. Analysts say that Iran and its regional proxy forces view Israel's domestic turmoil as a sign of weakness.
The protestos...
The VOA's International Edition continues. As a deeply divided Israel marks its 75th anniversary, analysts say Iran is gaining strength in the Middle East and could threaten Israel on several fronts. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israel is racked with internal divisions and mass protests over the judicial overhaul that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government wants. Analysts say that Iran and its regional proxy forces view Israel's domestic turmoil as a sign of weakness.
The protestos and more than the demonstrations, it is the threat of some reserves officers and pilots in Israel not to come if they will be called, gave the other side the impression that Israel is collapsing.
After clashes between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian worshippers at Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan, dozens of rockets were fired at Israel. Israeli officials say the rocket fire from both Lebanon in the north and Gaza in the south was orchestrated by Iran. The hardline leaders of Iran, called the Mullah regime by some Israeli analysts, have recently established ties with former adversaries like Saudi Arabia and Palestinian Hamas in order to consolidate regional alliances against Israel.
The Mullah regime, in the right time, in the right circumstances, in the right conditions, is going to launch what has been known in the military perspective as a multi-front war against Israel, meaning that Israel will be facing simultaneously, at the same time, a massive attack carried out by Iranian proxies from different arenas, most of them surrounding Israel, namely Lebanon, Syria, Gaza Strip, and maybe some other more remote circles. This is a concept that has been known in the Israeli strategic security perspective as the Ring of Fire.
While Iran strengthens its conventional capabilities and arms its regional proxies, it is also developing the nuclear option. Israeli officials believe Iran is just weeks away from having enough nuclear material for a bomb.
I think Iran is very close to having a bomb and having the capabilities to produce a bomb. And I think this is a big threat to Israel. However, I also don't see Iran as using the bomb, or I think the reason for having the bomb and having the capabilities of producing a bomb is mainly for deterrence. I think Iran is a rational player. Iran demonstrated since the revolution over four decades that interest state policy is also important alongside ideology.
Israeli officials debate whether a nuclear Iran would present an existential threat, but they say that Israel is prepared to defend itself against any nuclear or conventional attack coming from Iran and its regional proxies. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Singer, actor, and dedicated activist Harry Belafonte has died at the age of 96. We hear more now from VOA Steve Miller, who takes a look back at Belafonte's life.
Harry Belafonte died on Tuesday of congestive heart failure at his New York home with his wife by his side. That's according to a statement from public relations firm Sunshine Sachs Morgan & Lilis. Belafonte was a civil rights and entertainment giant who began as an actor and singer and became an activist and humanitarian. With his glowing, handsome face and silky, husky voice, Belafonte was one of the first black performers to gain a wide following on film and to sell a million records as a singer, and many still known for his signature hit, the Banana Boat Song. Possibly known better by its call of Deo. Belafonte forged a greater legacy once he scaled back his performing career in the 1960s and lived out his hero Paul Robeson's decree that artists are gatekeepers of truth. Steve Miller, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
In October 2017, astronomers found an odd celestial entity traveling through our solar system. Scientists found that this cigar-shaped space rock was the first interstellar visitor to our planetary neighborhood. Called Oumuamua, it was first thought to be a comet because of the way it accelerated from the sun. But the object didn't have some of the characteristics of a comet, such as a coma and tail. Scientists then thought it was an asteroid or a chunk of a Pluto-like planet, while others speculated the mystery visitor was really an alien probe or artifact. A pair of scientists from the University of California, Berkeley, and Cornell University suggest Oumuamua was most likely something called a dark comet, and its comet-like acceleration was provided by the release of hydrogen gas by the warming of the object's water ice. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, this has been International Edition on Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling, thank you so much for being with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day, be safe, and be well.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A major theme of the recent G7 meeting of foreign ministers in Japan was how member nations can combine their political and economic muscle to support countries on every continent in meeting their food, energy, climate, infrastructure, and technology challenges, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
It means shaping a more inclusive international system, including with UN reform. It means offering more countries better, more sustainable and more equitable ways to prosper while respecting their sovereignty. From Central Asia to the Pacific Islands to Africa, Latin America, and the Middle East, our goal is to offer leaders and citizens better choices, free from coercion, unsustainable debt, and malign influence.
G7 nations also discussed the challenges to a free, open, secure, and prosperous international system, most notably in light of Russia's war against Ukraine, noted Secretary Blinken.
We recommitted to Ukraine with the security and economic support that it needs today to defend its sovereignty and people, and for the longer term, to ensure that Ukraine doesn't just survive, that it thrives, and that Russia is deterred from further aggression.
With regard to China, the G7 nations are resolved and united in the need for candid discussions with Beijing about its unfair trade practices, its actions that undermine the international rules that all nations benefit from, and the risks if it breaks its word and starts arming Russia, warned Secretary Blinken. And of course, we're united in making clear to Beijing our opposition to unilateral changes to the status quo with Taiwan. Discussions also focused on the dangers of nuclear proliferation. Secretary Blinken expressed gratitude to Japan for the high priority that it has placed on countering nuclear threats,
including from the DPRK's dangerous ballistic missile launches, Iran's expansion of its nuclear activities, including the operation of advanced centrifuges, the accumulation of highly enriched uranium, for which it has no credible civilian explanation or purpose, Russia's New START suspension, and irresponsible nuclear rhetoric, and the PRC's opaque and rapid buildup of its own nuclear arsenal.
G7 foreign ministers committed to promoting open, transparent, resilient, and sustainable societies that champion human rights, justice, and dignity, and address the needs of the most vulnerable.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.